Ready for us to get started?
You betcha.
All right, step right in.
Ready to go?
Thank you all for having us. We appreciate the opportunity to come up here and talk to you about our proposal for the actual evaluation services. I know everybody's time is valuable, so we're going to go through these slides. In some cases, a little bit swiftly, there's a fair amount of information in here, but along the way, if you have any questions, feel free to jump right in and don't wait till the end, please. So we'll talk a little bit about just who we are, what we do. We'll also spend a little bit of time talking about the process that will be involved in transitioning services from your current actuarial service provider to us if we were chosen. And then if time permits at the end, we have some sample documents or deliverables that we can show you the types of reports that we issue, for example. So brief introductions. I'm Chris Johnson, colleague Brandon Fuller here. We're both fellows of the Society of Actuaries and enrolled actuaries under ERISA. I'm a principal of Run Wisdom. We both practice primarily in the pension area, although also spend some time in OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits. Primarily, that's if you sponsor a medical plan for retirees, for example. Collectively, close to 25 years of experience, the vast majority of that is with Run Wisdom, providing some of the very services that are being requested in the RFP. And our experience, both ERISA and non-ERISA plans, collectively bargained, non-collectively bargained, contributory, non-contributory, sort of runs the gamut in terms of our experience on pension plans. A little bit about Rudd and Wisdom. We're founded in 1945 by Jack Rudd and Gene Wisdom, hence the name Rudd and Wisdom. We're completely independent of any other service provider, owned by a subset of our current actuaries at the firm. So the folks who are doing the work are actually owners of the firm. And Jack and Gene sort of instilled some values from the very get-go, things like independence, professionalism, integrity, ethics, and those still remain the foundation upon which we build our practice to this day. One location in Austin, Texas. Our largest practice there is the retirement benefits practice. That's the one in which Brandon and I participate. Provide traditional actuarial services, the typical valuation services, financial reporting, things like that, as well as outsourced plan administration in some cases, record keeper, individual benefit calculations for individuals who are terminating or retiring. And we also do a fair amount of web-based products for both participants and plan sponsors. While that's the biggest practice, it's not the only practice. We have some folks who do the group health benefits. They would help out with these OPEB plans I was talking about earlier, as well as some folks who do life insurance, casualty insurance, expert witness. Just a brief sample list of some of our industries in which our clients currently operate. So energy companies, regulated or unregulated, pipeline operators, fair number of hospitals, insurance companies, and then other miscellaneous small businesses, professional service organizations. The typical pension plan size that we target is in the range of 100 to 5,000 participants. We try not to target anything much larger than that, you get much larger than that, and then an actuary might be spending a significant portion of their time on a single client, and we don't think that's the best way to operate. OPEB plans are a little bit different, so we have a wider range there, and that's a large statewide plan that's half a million covered lives that we handle there. And although we're located in Austin, we do have a fair number of clients all around the country. You can see the list here. So what do we feel like are the things that distinguish us from our competitors? Number one, the consultants are actuaries. We don't employ consultants who are not actuaries. We feel that the best way to do business is to have a direct line of communication with, from our clients directly to the actuaries. That way, there's no possibility of anything being lost in translation through a middleman. So all the team members that will service you would be actuaries, FSAs, or ASAs, or actuarial candidates. That's folks who are more junior level, who are pursuing, taking exams or pursuing the actuarial credentials. Another strength is the continuity of service. As you can probably tell, we're not salespeople, but we like to use one single team from start. So the folks you're dealing with right now, the same folks will be involved in providing services to your plan. Other actuarial firms sometimes have different teams that do different serve different functions. So they'd have a separate team that responded to the RFP, for example, another team that would come here and present, another group that would be involved in bringing you on board, and then hand it off yet again to another group that does the ongoing services. We feel like the relationship really starts from now, and we like to build on that from the get-go and make sure that you know, there's no inefficiencies or loss of information that's generated early on that would be gone if we were kept passing it off to different groups of people. Thirdly, focus on client service. We pride ourselves on being responsive to our clients, the clarity of our communications, not just email and phone calls, things of that nature, but also pretty comprehensive evaluation reports. Next, the depth of professional staff. We have, at this point, probably 35 to 40 employees, including some interns or part-time folks. But yet, we have 21 credentialed actuaries on staff. That's pretty top-heavy, as it turns out, related to some other large national firms that rivals the number of credentialed actuaries they might have on staff at any regional office. So we have 15 fellows and 6 associates, 8 of whom are also enrolled actuaries. And we've got a lot of experience. So for the principal actuaries, that's the owner group. Average experience there is approaching 30 years. So we've got a large number of folks there with a lot of experience that can serve as expert resources if some issue would come up that Brandon and I haven't seen in our experience. Odds are that some of these folks have been around for a long time, have seen something like that, and we can rely upon them as well. And lastly, the quality of peer review. We use a pretty extensive internal peer review process on all of our projects, and it's really this depth of professional staff and our experience that allows us to do that. We'll talk a little bit about that on the next slide. So first, the team. I've introduced myself and Brandon here. So I would be the lead actuary. Brandon would provide support actuarial services, and then a more junior group here that would be the actuarial analyst and support staff. And the way this lines up with our peer review cycle is if you sort of build from the bottom up. So the more junior level staff prepares the work, and then Brandon would review that work and check that work in detail. And in that situation, it might be some back and forth until the calculations are appropriate based upon both people involved here. And once Brandon signed off on the work, I'll pass it up to me for final review. And again, we could have some back and forth between myself and Brandon until we are convinced that what we're sending out is the deliverable is accurate and clear and meets all of the requirements. So just to highlight some of our expertise on the pension side as it pertains to just pension plans, traditional DB or cash balance plans, we serve both public and private employers with funding valuations as well as accounting valuations, whether you're subject to FASB. I know you guys do some GASB accounting. SERP and other excess plans, so if you have non-qualified plans, we have experience with that as well. In terms of actuarial assumptions and methods, a lot of experience preparing experience studies and assumption analysis. So you'll want to, it's recommended periodically, maybe every 5 years or so, that you actually look at the experience of your covered population in terms of things like retirement rates, termination rates, and how does that experience align with some of the assumptions that are being used in the valuation process. And you want to make sure that you're not having, the assumptions are not deviating significantly from your actual experience. You want to make sure those are aligned as best as you can. Setting investment return or discount rate assumptions by reviewing investment policies, your target asset allocations, investment classes, etc. And then reviewing the actuarial methods, of course, that are being used to calculate the liability, whether that's intra-age normal. I believe you guys are using intra-age normal right now for funding purposes, maybe level dollar. And then, as the plan matures, for example, are any considerations given to maybe changing those actuarial methods. Plan administration. We sponsor our own plan document platform, so we have experience drafting plan documents and certainly interpreting plan documents for sure, drafting summary plan descriptions for distribution to employees, employee benefit statements that can include a number of things, Social Security projections or a combined DB and DC projection. As I mentioned before, we have some web-based services that participants plan sponsors can use, as well as preparing the benefit calculations and election forms for folks who are retiring. And then miscellaneous other items here, projections, things like that as needed. Shifting over to the transition process, this graphic is just intended to sort of show the flow of how the transition would work, a really rough sample timeline basically in the bottom. But kickoff of the project, we prepare a detailed work plan and proposed timeline, lays out all the tasks we'll be preparing, and get your sign off on that. And then in this case, we'd collect information from the prior actuary. There's certain items that they'll need to provide to us that they used in the evaluation, most recently completed evaluation. We'll also be collecting information from y'all, plan documents, information such as that, trust statements, that type of thing. And in the transition year, we would actually replicate the prior year evaluations, the evaluations that were performed by the prior actuary, to provide a baseline for the work we're doing on an ongoing basis. And as we shift to the sort of current year work, we'd make sure we discuss with you what the appropriate assumptions would be to use for the valuation. And then I know you requested valuation reports 6 to 8 weeks after we would receive the data. So assuming we get the data shortly after the valuation date of March 1st, those reports would be issued in mid to late April. The next slide just converts that previous graphic into words, and maybe want to highlight a couple of aspects here. As part of the process dealing with the prior actuary, we prepare a pretty lengthy and detailed request for information that we would pass through you guys first, but it requests all the information that we would need from the prior actuary in detail, and it would also include a list of tasks that are either currently underway or on the horizon, and we want to make sure that it's clearly identified which firm is responsible for which task. We certainly don't want anything to fall through the cracks during the transition. We want to make sure it's clearly defined who's doing what. And then in terms of that replication of the prior actuarial evaluation, that, as I said, performs or sort of sets the baseline for the next year's valuation, and that allows us to do this, what's termed a gain-loss analysis, whereby from one valuation to the next, you evaluate are there any gains or losses that are developing as a result of liabilities or assets that are changing the funded status of the plan, and it tries to isolate what are the sources of those gains or losses so we get a better understanding of what's creating that, and it ties back to before, as I said, some of the assumptions might be contributing to that, where if you have consistent losses under the plan, it could be a function of we need to true up those actuarial assumptions that are being used. And then I think this other information we've already talked about, so the information we'll collect from you and move forward with the current year evaluation. So maybe I'll take a pause there, maybe see if you have any questions, and then Brandon will maybe walk us through some of these sample documents and maybe give you a flavor of the type of deliverables that we would provide, and maybe they'll trigger additional questions. Just start with the work plan, maybe, Brandon. Just go in order.
We're off screen.
Are the prior actuary data request either one?
Is there a way to just put this up? What's the transition? You maybe will cover that. I mean, what do you anticipate time? You've got to work with the prior actuary, bring that information forward, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, it's my understanding that the RFP covered work starting for in 2019. So that first valuation date would be March 1, 2019.
Okay.
And so yeah, you guys have ample time to make your decision. That 2019 work would start, a little before the evaluation date of March 1. So that gives us appropriate time to replicate the prior evaluation between now and then. That's work we probably want to do late this summer, early in the fall, not put that off too long. That way we can hit the ground running in 2019 to pick up for that evaluation. Brandon, can you make that on? Oh, it's fine. Everybody can see that. That's fine. So this is just a sample, the prior actuary data request. This is a sample from another sponsor that actually had a pension plan and a CERB or a non-qualified plan. But if you kick over to the exhibit, that might be the easiest to see. So we'll lay out all the data elements that are going to be necessary to perform the valuation. For you guys, I know the plan is frozen One question I guess we would have for you is, do you know if the benefits, the frozen benefits, have those been previously certified by the actuary, or are those something that when a participant goes to retire, are you recalculating that frozen benefit from compensation and service records? You're recalculating
it? Yes.
Okay. So there, because of that, we'd want to make sure we have all the pieces that would be necessary to do that. And since your plan was frozen in 2007, I recall, that's reaching back a little bit to get compensation records, service records. So we want to make sure we have all of that information so that when it comes time for participant X to retire, then we've got the information necessary.
Did you guys do that benefit calculation?
We do, yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that process works? And then,
sure. Right, so we do it a couple different ways with our existing clientele, and it really depends on who is interacting with the participant. So in one model, we would receive a request typically from the employer, and it would say participant X is ready to retire. The retirement date is April 1st, 2019. Please prepare the paperwork. So we'll gather the data. Hopefully we have all of it, but if there's anything we have to reach out to you guys for to clarify, we do that. We prepare the calculation, actually populate the election forms, which are the forms that they would need to fill out to make their election, show all the different optional forms of payment. Have all the necessary forms roll over, for example, if you have rollover eligible forms of payment, et cetera, beneficiary designation forms. And then we either give that paperwork to you as the plan sponsor, who would then interact directly with the participant. Oftentimes that's the case. You guys know the participant. You have a relationship with them. And then you have them complete the paperwork, return it to you, and then typically then you would just interact directly with your trust custodian to make sure the payment gets started.
How long does that process take?
So typically, say we have a 2-week turnaround on from the request of the calculation to issuing the paperwork to y'all. Obviously, rush issues come up every now and then. Or in some cases, it's maybe we don't have the data that we need to do that, so that may some back and forth may exist. Certainly, no longer than 2 weeks is our typical turnaround time. The other model would be we can give it directly to the participants, for example, and then they can return it to us. We review it to make sure it's completed appropriately. Then get your all sign off on that, and whether you or us directly interact with the trust custodian. Either way. And maybe the next, we can bring up a sample packet that we can show you. In fact, well, yeah, let me just do that right now. Maybe if you have the sample IB. This happens to be a letter that would be drafted as sent directly to the participant, but that's really the forms that will be more important. Brandy, maybe like page 3 or so. So listing what are all the forms that are enclosed and what are the functions of all of them. We found this to be useful. Because there can be a fair number of forms, and the forms that need to be completed are contingent upon what form of payment is elected, oftentimes. So here, this is just intended to provide an easier picture of if they choose option A, for example, which happens to be the joint 100 survivor here, they would need to complete the forms with the check boxes just to make sure that, you know, typically the retiree is retiring, no longer right, going to receive a paycheck, and so they're ready to start their pension pretty much the next month so they can have some cash flow. And what we want to avoid is any sort of back and forth that's just a result of, oh, you didn't fill out this form correctly, or, you know, we need to get your spousal consent, for example, on something else or something like that. So we want to try to lay it out here and make sure we have taken care of from square one. And then further on down the line, we'll just see that here's where it lists some of the relevant information for the calculation, their accrued benefit, and any early retirement reduction that would apply. Here, I know you guys have different early retirement factors as they apply in both the base and the excess piece. There's a little bit of complexity there, but... and then we just list out here your optional forms of payment along with the dollar amounts and some general description of the form of payment. At this point, it happens to offer a sample sign. And then if they choose to defer instead, commence immediately if they're early retirement eligible, for example. And the summary table and so on. So the rest will then just be all the applicable forms and try to make sure that it's easy enough to follow. It's pretty complex set of rules that govern these distributions, but to make it easy as possible for the participant, that's the goal. Brandy, you want to kick back over and we'll just wrap up the data request. So we'll collect all the information that I was saying, all the detailed data that we would need to do the calculations, and then later on, Brandon, maybe it's the last page of this exhibit, of this document that has the description of the tasks that would be relevant. And so here, this happens to be for a private plan that's subject to PPAs that are extra filings and things are here that would not be applicable to yours, but in any case, it's making sure we list out all the tasks that are ongoing, who's doing it. Make sure nothing falls through the cracks there. Brandon, how about the work plan? Go for that real quick. So this is just a sample work plan that we would prepare, laying out the tasks that we would be completing and a proposed completion date. And this sort of lays out for entire evaluation process, which is an annual process that we undertake in. Who's doing what, who's responsible for which piece, and then we set some sort of interim deadlines here. There'll be some flexibility with respect to these items, but ultimately it's, we have a tight turnaround with respect to completing the actual evaluation. We want to make sure that we're staying on track as best as possible. So something like this that we can follow along with usually helps in that regard. So here, we'll prepare the work plan with the detailed dates, have a kickoff teleconference where we can make sure we're gathering the appropriate information and talk about things like data issues or plan provisions, assumptions, things like that. Collect the information from you guys with respect to trust assets or things of that nature. Draft of actual assumptions before we actually perform the evaluation, data questions, things like that. Prepare the actual valuation calculations, put it into a draft report, share that draft report with you guys in advance of finalization, incorporate any feedback you guys might have into the final report, and then to the extent there's any interaction with auditors, we'll be available for that as well. Maybe the last thing we can show, there's a sample statement, we can kick that there. Do you guys provide annual benefit statements to your employees? No, not at all. Okay, skip that. How about just the GASB report then?
Why don't we?
Yeah. Since it's frozen. When it was frozen in 2007, everybody who was a current participant, because it never changes.
Yeah.
Their benefit is fixed for normal retirement age at 65. That dollar amount does not change. What will affect their payments is when they decide to retire.
Well, the reason I ask is dealing with other people that have a frozen pension plan, and they, we've got something, but we don't know what it is, and we don't know when we can get it, and so what? I just wonder if an annual statement or something to an employee that has a benefit, would it be of any benefit? That's my only question. Because most people that have left a plan, they don't have the slightest idea what they got. And then they've got, how much benefit you got? You got to go to HO or HR, and it gets to be quite a task. So, anyway.
Well, in our experience, it can, even for frozen plans, it can be beneficial to provide them. It doesn't have to be every year. Maybe it's every couple years, every third year, something like that. Because when they do become early retirement eligible, even though their age 65 benefit doesn't change, once they hit age 55 and 15, I think it might be
55 or 15.
So you guys have a couple different early retirement eligibilities. But we have some statements where we lay out, if you were to retire at age 55, at age 62, at age 65, here would be the immediate annuity commencing at that point. That way, as they're approaching those ages, they can, does this statement show that, Brandon?
Should, yeah.
Right, so here, benefit projection date. Even though, say, 11-148 is their actual normal retirement date, that projected benefit is going to be the same at all ages here. It would still be that 33.14 if that was their frozen benefit, right? That's the amount payable at NRD. But the monthly benefit amount payable immediately, this would vary based upon ages 55, 60, 62. It gives them some idea at least of as they're planning for retirement, maybe they have some.
Yeah, we have an in-house calculator that we use when we have an employee who's thinking about retiring, so we can gin up similar type of report for them.
Sure.
So that we can look at what their replacement income will be with retirement.
Yeah. Because maybe the last thing we'll show, I'll just be quickly scrolling through some of the relevant parts of, Brent, can you fit that on one page, perhaps, or is it too small? So I know y'all provided a sample report from a prior evaluation, and it appeared to have a combination of the funding results and the GASB results sort of all combined into one evaluation report. We typically tend to do two separate reports. It's easier to keep those things separate. They may have different assumptions and methods and things. And then when an auditor picks up a GASB report, for example, they know exactly what they're looking at. But so we try to prepare our reports with all the information that you're going to need to meet the accounting standard. Brandon, if we can just go maybe to like section 3 or 4, where we actually have some of the, I'm not sure if it has bookmarks. So all the necessary exhibits that you would need to comply with the GASB standards with respect to your plan assets, which is called the fiduciary net position under GASB, and then all of the disclosure requirements under section 4, I think, Brandon. Assumptions and methods, or maybe it's back on section 2. So the calculation of your things that go in your RSIs, reconciliation of liability and assets, building the 10-year history, the calculation of the pension expense, comparison of your employer contributions, versus the actually determined contribution, that type of thing. So we try to give you a rather comprehensive report that gives you all the information you need, and a lot of times is may contain more information than what you think you need, but we've gotten a lot of feedback from outside auditors, for example, that appreciate the level of detail we have in our report, because that means that it makes it a little easier on the work that they have to do and less back and forth with either you, the client, or us. So I went through a lot of stuff really fast there, but happy to take any questions or comments.
We're not smart enough to ask a question.
I doubt that. Well, if not, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming up.
Yep, no problem. Of an actuary is all you can take, so I know that for sure. I work with them every day, so
we just put in the car together for
that's
an hour.
Right. Yeah.
You said the benefits are, of course, calculated 65, but a person can retire at an age different than age 65 based on years of service and age, can they not?
They do, but the age of service will never change because it's only going to be based on their income through 2007 when it was frozen. And then their years of service also were frozen in 2007. So even if they continue to work till whenever.
A deal's a deal, in other words.
It's a done deal. The only thing is I don't think that they have all the salary information for those that were terminated prior to when it was frozen.
Yeah.
When they created those final annual statements, those were for all current employees.
Thank you, gentlemen.
That were here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So they had their salary information in our payroll system, so they were able to create this simulator, if you will, that we could estimate for them.
And the reason I ask the question, I know working with people, they have a frozen plan. They don't have any idea where it is, who what's in it, mm-hmm. what their benefits are, who they contact, nothing when it comes time. I'm sure we're doing a better job than that, but I'm just...
We actually looked at all of those who are 65 and over who weren't currently participating, and we reached out to them a year ago this last summer. And we have all of them now are drawing except for one. Like you said, some of them weren't even aware that they had a benefit, or they at the time they probably weren't vested, but they aged into it and they became eligible at 55 and over. But maybe they terminated from here at 48 years of age, and And they might have had the time of service, but they didn't have the age. So when they left, they didn't think they had a benefit or weren't aware that they had the benefit until they aged into the benefit.
Well, we just spend an awful lot of money on this thing every year, and if there's any way to get some residual benefit from it, it just seemed like to me we would be smart to do it. I don't know what that is, how
we'll
to do it.
We'll look into it, Leroy. It makes sense.
I mean, you know, we spend a hell of a lot of money on this thing every year, and most employees, Mark, have forgotten about it, or it's of little or no importance to them. And I think we ought to reinforce that any way we can. My thought.
Well noted.
So now, Mr. David, we're going to go through the selection process here. And how I did the resolution was basically we need to rank them 1, 2, and 3. And I do want to point out one that Gallagher did have some deviations to our contract on limited liability. So that's why I'm doing 1, 2, and 3. We can't come to terms with contract with any one of the actuaries. We'll go down to the next one.
This will keep us from having to recall you guys back and have another meeting.
And again, we should be looking at qualifications and not fees.
Not money.
Not fees. I know that one did have fees, but they were not supposed to. I didn't want to stop him through his presentation, so he can't do that, but you didn't see the fees on that one. It's only on qualification.
How much staff time do you think is involved in making a conversion?
Look at Michelle.
I looked at the wrong person, didn't I?
You got Michelle, and that's it could be
a lot of that information is available already because of what we do for the audits. But like I said, I don't think that this, for example, the third ones who are suggesting the annual statements, I don't think they realize that all that information is still on W-2s, hard copy, for some of the older employees who haven't started. I mean, I don't know, but again, I don't know what our current actuaries have to be able to do the valuation, everything, as far as, obviously they've got salary information somewhere on everyone that they're able to do the valuations. That's kind of one of my internal notes I took on that, but.
I've never been through a conversion, so
I know your selections are based on criteria, on qualifications, but they've given us fees on one of these. Are the other ones similar or close to
You know what? Gallagher's is similar to the second one, but the third one, I did not ask for price.
So okay, well, I'm saying so the people we're using now are similar to the one that they've disposed of.
Right. But the third one, I don't know what the pricing is because we didn't ask for price.
And you didn't ask for that.
No, I didn't. And there, you know, that wasn't supposed to be part of the presentation, too. It was.
It's probably something that Retirement Horizons, that's their standard package that includes that. And that's just part of what they do.
How many employees do we have in retired year? 5, 10?
5 or 6.
We've had a lot this last year. But then, like I said, we went out and saw some of those that were 65 and over. So I'll say I could go back and look, but I'll say I've done 8 or 10 just in the last year.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about their report to the employee, retired employee, and how much was involved and how many times do they have to do that and that type of thing.
Yeah, and then the deaths, you know, whenever you have a death, you've got to go back and get the, you know, you've got to do the work for the beneficiary and depending on the circumstances. Yeah. It's case by case how much time is going to be involved with every particular retiree.
And you could have a retiree that was involved in all three plans you've had.
Well, if they're a transition employee, so that's something that Gallagher could have answered on that one, too, because we have the people in the prior plan, the new plan, and then we have what are called transition employees, and then we have the canal employees. So I don't know if the other two that presented today are aware of all the different plans that they might need to go look at in the different calculations.
Gallagher does that currently?
Yes, sir.
And so a new actuary, that responsibility would roll over to them too then?
Yes, sir. They're going to have to learn those little nuances for every particular retiree that comes along. It's almost like a flow chart of when they were hired, when they were terminated, which plan, you know, which equation or formula is going to follow for them.
Are we happy with Gallagher?
I'm very happy with Gallagher.
Dave, are you happy with Gallagher?
Yes.
And their reports?
Well, you said something about
a... The only thing that surprised me in the response, they had additional information, and they said that they had a deviation to the black already, which means they wanted to limit their exposure to the plan to the fees that they pay. And we don't, I don't like that. Yes. But just say that we can come to a mutual agreement on that.
Well, everybody, you can always ask for something, but you're not going to get it. They have directors, they have E&O coverage.
It wasn't in the original contract that they signed back in 2013, so they want the business.
They want to limit their exposure to the in relationship to the fee
that they pay.
So in other words, their exposure, if they have a $10,000 fee,
we're not charging too much, so we're not going to be very liable.
Well, we've just dealt with this one today. Yeah, that was a big. That could have been a big number.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Could have been a bunch of big numbers.
Yeah. But at the same time, they do. And I want to say, they said we come to a mutual agreement. We can work something out. I just need to make sure
the criteria is a previous contract.
Right. I mean, no. Yeah. We're not going to accept that.
Yeah.
We can't have actuaries limited to their fees.
Rudd and Wisdom's theirs was $10 million. I was reading in there. Their policy, just for comparison. So if we changed it, it'd be $10,000 versus $10 million.
What is their current coverage? Probably 10 or 20 million.
You mean Gallagher?
Uh-huh.
Not zero. I mean, there's no limit to liability.
No, I was saying, what is their limit of their E&O coverage?
Oh, they're huge. They're
I was saying $10 million, $30 million.
Probably.
Yeah, I was gonna say something like that. I don't know for a fact, but it's got to be that much.
So how do we do this?
We got to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, so we just kind of verbally just talk it out and fill in the blanks.
Exactly.
Sounds like to me like per.
Sounds like staff is happy with Gallagher.
Staff's happy. No reason to switch.
If they will.
And then if they switch, then that's good. Then we kind of settle on who's two,
and then three.
I personally thought that the Rudd and Wilson proposal was much more professional than.
I agree.
Then Retirement Horizons.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Right. So if we put Rudd and Wilson at number two and then the other one at number three.
Gallagher was so contingent on getting rid of that limitation.
And that's why I did the 1-2.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So.
And you're good. And, well, this is your negotiated contract period.
And that's
right.
So. Thompson, you read your resolution based upon our selection.
Be resolved that the Retirement Committee of Brazos River Authority hereby authorizes the General Manager and CEO to negotiate and execute contract for actuarial services with Arthur J. Gallagher and Company for 5 years, with the contract containing such terms and conditions as the General Manager and CEO shall determine to be the best interest. Brazos River Authority, in the event that the staff is unable to successfully negotiate a contract with Arthur J. Gallagher and Company, the committee authorized General Manager, CEO to negotiate and execute a contract with Rudd and Wisdom, Inc. In the event that the staff is unable to negotiate a contract with Rudd and Wisdom, Inc., the committee authorized General Manager and CEO to negotiate and execute a contract with Retirement Horizon, Incorporated.
Make a motion, we approve the resolution.
Motion made by, and is there a second?
Second.
Motion and second have been made. Please poll the committee.
Chairman Taylor.
Yes.
Director Luton.
Yes.
Director Tallis.
Yes.
Mr. Forte.
Yes.
Mr. McClendon.
Yes.
Mr. Wheelis.
Yes.
Before we adjourn, David, is this 5-year what we just passed on that resolution, is that something that is the 5 years, is that, where does that come from?
It's a requirement that we go back out for RFP for like auditors. And
required by our what?
I think it's a statutory requirement.
Statutory requirement.
It's because we're getting ready to do our external auditors too. And their 5 years is coming up, so we'll have to